Greetings, I'm Fred Zaspel. Welcome to another author interview here at Books at a Glance. We're continuing our discussion with Dr. Steve Wellum about his chapter 14 of his Systematic Theology, the first volume. And here we're dealing with the question of, or the issue of kingdom through covenant. And he's been taking us through the covenants, how they carry the Bible story. And we have been looking at some of them one by one. We've seen the creation covenant, the Noahic covenant. Today, we come to the Abrahamic covenant. So first up, Steve, highlight for us just briefly the provisions of the Abrahamic covenant.
Yeah, so the Abrahamic covenant, obviously so foundational, crucial in scripture, but we do have to place it in its location in Genesis. Of course, that's where it's found, and also in some sense, redemptive history, because Genesis is laying out a lot of years from Adam to fall to Noah to Abraham, right? So Genesis 12, I argue that the main covenantal texts, 12, 15, 17, 22, are crucial covenant texts. And obviously the whole Abrahamic narrative that then leads to then Isaac narratives, Jacob, the patriarchs, that takes you to the end of Genesis. So really 12 through 50 is really the unpacking of the Abrahamic covenant, and then through Abraham to Isaac to Jacob to the nation of Israel. So Abraham is set in Genesis 12 in the context of Genesis 1 to 11, right? And so I take that to mean then that Abraham, and of course you have a deliberate contrast in Genesis 11 with 12. So Genesis 11, where you have the Tower of Babel and you have the dispersing of languages, already in chapter 10 with the Table of Nations, as each of the sons are mentioned and the progenitors that come from that, they mention many languages, right? It's already assuming in Genesis 10 that there are many languages. So chapter 10 and 11 are inverted in the sense that obviously you would have to have 11 first before you can have 10, but 10 is going with out of Noah comes all the nations, but 11 is, I think, almost Genesis 3 revisited now, not just in terms of Adam and Eve, but now sort of at a corporate level, humans refusing to obey God, right? Refusing to scatter, refusing to carry out the creation commands, fruitful, multiply, spread out over the earth to expand the world type of thing. And they are wanting the globalist dream, aren't they? Right. They want to unite, to stand against God, to make a name for themselves. And that making a name for themselves is picked up in Genesis 12, where God says, I'll make a name for you, Abram. So there's where we have, in contrast to the fallenness of this world, God now is going to keep his Genesis 3:15 promise, not just through Noah, but now narrowed through one man. And Abraham is a man saved by sovereign grace, right? So we know that Abraham was a pagan, Ur of the Chaldees. Joshua tells us this at the end of Joshua, so we don't think of him just as a nice seeker after God type of thing. God sought him. God chose him. Election that runs through the entire Bible. It's difficult to miss that theme that many Arminians miss. But you have God, by his sovereign choice and election, has chosen Abraham to be the means by which creation will be restored. The seed of the woman will come. All the Adamic effects of sin will be turned over type of thing. So obviously Abraham is so foundational to the Bible story. Narrowed through him, the means of salvation come through Abraham. And in the provisions of the Abrahamic covenant, right? God makes promises. I'll make you a mighty nation. I'll make you have a great name. So he's going to give him progeny. He's going to make him a great name. He's going to give him land. That's developed as you work through the Abrahamic narratives. And you also have, he will bring a blessing to all nations. And so that universal focus that we've seen already in Adam creation, Noah, that universal focus, the purpose of working through one man and one family is not that God is a party spirit. He doesn't choose the Jew in order on the basis of race, right? So, you have all these racial things today where, almost God is a racist if he chose the Jews type of thing. No, he chooses them to benefit all nations, right? So that every nation will benefit. So you have every tribe, nation, people, and tongue. And so that universal focus will come through this one man. And so you have those promises made. Abraham, you are the one that I will make from you a great name. You will have progeny. You will have land. Through you will come restoration. I think that's the context and the provisions that are given in that Abrahamic covenant. And then these other texts, I think, unpack how God is going to do that. More information is given, more data is given, more unfolding of that covenant. So Genesis 12, you really have covenant promises that are given to Abram. And then you have in Genesis 15, you have covenant ratification. God now ratifies that covenant. And you have then further promises. So some have argued that there's two covenants with Abraham. Some have argued this on the basis of, I think Williamson argues this, on the basis of the conditional, unconditional. So Genesis 15, the ratification of the covenant is God does this on his own. So that's an unconditional covenant. And in Genesis 17, with the institution of circumcision, you must obey the covenant. That's another covenant because that's tied to conditional. I think those who argue that are too much dividing up covenants in terms of merely unconditional, merely conditional. The Abrahamic narratives are one piece. And so instead you have promises, you have ratification, marriage in some sense ceremony takes place. Peter Gentry describes it as you have sort of the engagement ring that's given in Genesis 12 with all the promises. You have the ratification of that in Genesis 15, and they have the outworking of that covenant relationship in further promises that unfold. So I'll just stop there, but that's how I'm setting up the Abrahamic covenant. And then there's more details that are given in later chapters.